I invite you to open your Bibles to Revelation chapter 20 tonight. Book of Revelation chapter 20. I had the privilege of going up to Coshocton last night to Victory Baptist Church. Brother Ralph Johnson was having a revival meeting. We got to hear Buster Kinsey preach last night. It was good to see Brother Kinsey and his wife Lisa and the three kids. We're all sitting right in front of me in the row right there. Brother Buster did a good job. It was good to be up there. I haven't been up to that church in a long, long time. Oh, that's right. You're preaching tonight. I forgot. His songbook. He uses a purple one. Is it right there in the front corner? Other side. Everybody watches. Aaron walks down the front row. All right, Revelation chapter 20 this evening. They say the three R's of education are reading, writing, and arithmetic. Now that kind of shows where our education is lacking a little bit there, because only one of those three words really starts with an R. But we have been looking at the four R's of things to come. Looking into the future. What is next on God's timetable? So much has already happened through 4,000 years of the Old Testament, from creation all the way to the book of Malachi. Much has already happened in the New Testament age, from beginning in Matthew and running through the church age. God does not just tell us what has happened or what is happening, but He tells us what is going to happen, and thank God for that. If we didn't know that the Bible told us what's going to happen, then we'd be left to everybody else that's trying to tell us what's going to happen, and most of them don't have a clue. They are trying to figure out what's happening right now. They have no idea what's going to happen. But God has spelled it out for us. He who is the Alpha, the Omega, the beginning and the ending, who knows the beginning, the ending from the beginning and beginning from the ending, has already told us what we can anticipate from this time forward. And we began a few weeks ago looking at that first R, and that is the rapture. And what we're waiting for right now is for the Lord Himself to descend from heaven with a shout, with the voice of the archangel and the trump of God, and the dead in Christ shall rise first, and we which are alive and remain shall be caught up together with them in the clouds in the air. That's 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, beginning in verse number 16. And that's the next thing on God's timetable in dealing with mankind. There are many other things that are involved, the judgment seat of Christ, things like that, that we're not getting into all the details of it. But the next thing on God's calendar is the rapture of the church. And that's what we're waiting for right now. Now, there's many that don't believe that's the next thing on God's timetable. And I'm sorry for them, because I'd rather be anticipating and looking forward to our departure than looking for the plagues and the seals and the trumpets and all that other kind of stuff. I'm glad we're waiting for the Lord to come back. When Paul wrote his letters to the Thessalonians, every chapter he ended with emphasizing that the Lord is coming back, and we're to be looking forward to that. And so the next event, what we're waiting for to happen, is the rapture of the church. We don't know when it's going to happen. We don't know. There's no signs of His coming that we can look for. We just know that any moment that trumpet could sound and we would disappear from this world and rise to meet Him in the air. The Bible says that this is the hope which purifies us. In other words, knowing that Jesus Christ could come back at 7:36 according to that clock, knowing He could come back at 7:37 or 7:38 or at 8 o'clock, 8:30, 9 o'clock tonight, means that we're always in anticipation of His coming, and that should purify our lives. We will be more careful of what we're thinking about, what we're meditating on, what we're musing, I think is the word Dr. Hamblin would use, what we're musing about in this present time, what we're doing, where we're going. We would be more careful if we were mindful that the Lord could come back at any instant. And what would He find us doing when He comes? So be mindful. That's the hope that purifies. So the next event is the rapture. The second R after that is what we talk about is the revealing. As soon as the church is taken out, there's going to be one that's going to rise up to power. He is probably on this earth right now, We do not and cannot know His name. But when all the Christians suddenly and instantly disappear, the world will be cast into utter chaos. The economy of the world is going to bottom out. The workforce, isn't it bad enough already right now? Most businesses are saying right now they cannot keep up with the demand because nobody will work. Everybody wants to sit home and collect these stimulus checks and incentive money, and nobody wants to go out and work anymore. But when all the Christians are taken out, imagine, we're talking about millions of people. And so when they're all taken out, imagine the chaos that's going to be left with the vacuum behind it, and there's going to be questions and issues, and militaries are going to be decimated because of all the Christians taken out, the economy, the workforce, families wondering what happened, all these different kind of things. And so we read in the Scripture that there's going to be one that's going to rise up during that time that's going to have all the answers. He's going to be the Antichrist, the imitation of Christ, a fake Christ, but He's going to represent or look like Christ, and people are going to fall in line for Him. For the first 3.5 years, He will solve the world's problems. He'll make a covenant with the Jewish people. They'll begin building their temple over in Jerusalem, something that's been wanting for a long time. He'll get them in their rightful place there in Jerusalem. He'll get rid of that Muslim mosque and let them have their worship right there in their own capital. And He will take care of all those things for 3.5 years as a peacemaker. But in the middle of the 3.5 years, we read in the book of Revelation, the beast that comes out of the sea enters into Him and He changes completely. And He becomes what His real nature is. He's just faking it the first 3.5 years. He'll become the man of sin, the son of perdition. Those are the terms that are used to describe Him. He will at that time break that covenant with the Jews and seek to annihilate Israel from off the face of the earth. And for the next 3.5 years, He will persecute Jewish people, anybody that befriends them, which would include all the Christians, quote unquote. He will institute the mark mandate, where everybody will have to have that 666 that we're so familiar with on their forehead or their right hand. And He will do that, and He will try to annihilate everybody that doesn't agree with Him. He'll build an image of Himself and make everybody worship that, like the Hebrew boys in the Old Testament, and it'll be utter chaos. That will be the revealing, when that man of sin is revealed. The third R then comes after that, and that is the revelation. And that's what we looked at last Wednesday night, the revelation. And that is when the Lord comes back again, not down into the clouds at the rapture to catch us away, but He comes all the way down here to the earth. And when He comes down to the earth in Revelation 19, He's got 10,000 of His saints behind Him riding on white horses. And He makes war with the inhabitants of the earth. Now the inhabitants of the earth at that time are the Antichrist and all of His minions, all of His armies, all of His warring nations. And the Lord comes back as they are all fighting against the Lord. The Lord comes back, and by the word of His tongue, by the word of His mouth, He slays the multitudes of the nations. You and I don't have to lift a finger. We're just riding on the horses behind Him. We don't have to worry about missiles being fired back at us. He's in the lead. He's our shield. And He will come back and He will destroy the Antichrist. And He will destroy Babylon, Revelation chapter 16 and 17. Which will be the Antichrist headquarters during that time. And the revelation is when God comes back down here to this earth, Jesus Christ comes back, and His foot sets on Mount Zion, and the minor prophets tell us that when His foot sets on that mountain, it will cleave from east to west. That mountain itself will cleave when He sets foot on it, and He will return to this earth. So we've got the rapture, the revealing, and the revelation. The fourth R is the rest. And that's what we're looking at tonight, the rest. So what do you mean by, when I say the rest, I don't mean like a nap. And I don't mean like all the rest. I mean the rest. When the Lord comes back, it is going to be utopia on this earth. This earth that has been cursed since Adam and Eve were cast out of the garden. This earth that Paul tells us in Romans is groaning and travailing in pain until now. One of these days is going to be refreshed. It's going to be renewed. It's going to be like it was before Adam and Eve ate of that tree in the midst of the garden. It is going to be a perfect environment. But only after all those other things happen. That tribulation period, those seals and those trumpets and those vials, the harsh judgment of God, the trees and the seas and everything being burned up. It's going to take a lot. It's going to take utter judgment and devastation before this rest takes place. But when the Lord comes back and sets His foot on that mountain, then begins the rest. And the rest is recorded here in Revelation chapter 20. Look with me if you would, and that's where we began by saying, look at Revelation 20. Verse number 1, in verse 19, we read about the Lord, or chapter 19, about that thing about the Lord coming back, slaying all the armies, wiping out all the people. It's the great supper. It's the supper of the great God, is what it calls it at the end of verse number 17. The supper of the great God. What is that supper? All the fowls of the air invited to eat on the carcasses of those who have been slain in that battle of the Antichrist against the Christ. And when that battle's over and all is done, in chapter 20 and verse 1, John says, "And I saw an angel come down from heaven having the key of the bottomless pit and a great chain in his hand. And he laid hold on the dragon, that old serpent, which is the devil and Satan, and bound him 1,000 years. You know, before the earth can have rest, that devil's got to be dealt with. He is the source behind the image and the beast and the false prophet. And so if this world is going to have rest, if Jesus Christ is going to come back and there's going to be any peace on this earth, he's going to have to be dealt with. So the Bible tells us that an angel comes down with a chain in his hand, wraps it around the devil, binds him, and casts him into the bottomless pit for 1,000 years. I find it interesting, some Bible teachers or Bible scholars, whatever we want to call them, say, well, that great chain, that's just figurative. A chain can't bind Satan. Well, if God made the chain, it sure can. And I'm just going to take it literal and believe it's literal, that an angel's going to bind him and cast him into that bottomless pit, and he's going to remain there for 1,000 years. That term 1,000 years appears 6 times in these verses here in Revelation chapter 20. That's the first time in verse number 2, then verse 3, and cast him into the bottomless pit and shut him up. And I like those words, shut him up. I know that means bound him and put him down there, but I like the word shut him up. That means he's not talking anymore either. And set a seal upon him that he should deceive the nations no more till the 1,000 years should be fulfilled. And after that he must be loosed a little season. We'll talk about that next time. And I saw thrones, and they that sat upon them. And judgment was given unto them. I'll give you advance notice. That's talking about you right there in verse number 4. And I saw thrones and they that sat upon them. Those are the saints of God that followed Him on the white horses coming down in chapter 19. They that sat upon them, judgment was given unto them. And I saw the souls of them that were beheaded for the witness of Jesus. If you remember, that's during that 7 years of the revealing of the Antichrist, especially the last 3.5 years, refusing to take the mark, being beheaded for it. Those that were beheaded, we read in Revelation chapter 5, I believe it is, of them, and other places, chapter 7 maybe, of them up in heaven crying out for vengeance. Well, God puts them here, and He said, which had not worshipped the beast, neither His image, neither received His mark upon their foreheads or in their hands, and they lived and reigned with Christ 1,000 years. There's the third time it appears. The fourth time in verse 5, but the rest of the dead lived not again till the 1,000 years were finished. This is the first resurrection. Blessed and holy is he that hath part in the first resurrection. On such the second death hath no power, but they shall be priests of God and of Christ, and shall reign with him 1,000 years. There's the fifth time. And when the 1,000 years are expired, 6 times. So 6 times the 1,000 years are described to us. We have put a title on this period of time, this 1,000 years of peace. We call it the millennium. Now the word millennium, like the word rapture, is not a biblical word. It is a Latin word that goes way back in history for church history, for those that came up with it. Somebody said, well, this was invented in the 1600s. No, this is long before that. The word mill means 1,000, and the word annum means years. So millennium simply means 1,000 years. And this is 1,000 years where the devil is bound in the bottomless pit. He's not deceiving the nations. He's not accusing the brethren. He's not having free reign on the earth. Can you imagine our world right now if the devil was bound? there'd be a lot less problem and trouble just by that one thing right there. Then you add to that the fact that Jesus Christ is right here on the earth. And you've got 1,000 years of peace on earth, goodwill toward men. Remember when the angel said that at his first coming? Peace on earth, goodwill toward men. When he comes that second time, that's exactly what there's going to be for 1,000 years. Because Satan is bound and Jesus Christ is living on this planet right here for 1,000 years. There's much to say about this in the Bible, and we're not going to have time. We're going to have to just pick some passages to look, and I trust that you'll write them down, and then maybe when you're reading your Bible, you'll notice the other ones that are there, especially when you get into Isaiah, Jeremiah, and Ezekiel. We talked about it last week. The second coming, that revelation is mentioned by them often. They don't mention the rapture because to the Old Testament, they knew nothing about a church. So they knew nothing about a rapture. They weren't looking for that. They're looking for that revelation. They're looking for Him coming on that white horse to break the bondage of Rome and sit on the throne of David and all that. And when He comes this that second time, that's what He's going to do. And He'll have that perfect kingdom for 1,000 years right here on this earth. It's kind of hard for us to imagine. Look back, if you would, at Matthew chapter 6. There is a common phrase that's used for this 1,000 year. We said that the word millennium doesn't appear in the Bible, and that's true. Not really a reason to pitch it, but just to recognize that the 1,000 years are mentioned there in Revelation chapter 20, whether you use the Latin word or not, those 1,000 years are mentioned. But here's what I want you to see. In Matthew chapter 6, and again, we have to get our mind on it. In Matthew chapter 6, no church hasn't been started yet, right? Pentecost. No church. No gospel to the Gentiles. No missionary to the foreign parts of the world. This is all strictly lost sheep of the house of Israel. And Jesus in Matthew chapter 6 is with His 12 Jewish disciples. And in this chapter, He teaches them how to pray. In verse 5, He said, "When thou prayest, thou shalt not pray as the hypocrites." You know, we know all this. We don't have time to look at it. But go down to verse number 9. "After this manner, therefore, pray ye." Now, He's not teaching the church how to pray. A lot of churches recite this prayer. He's not teaching the church how to pray. There is no church. He's not teaching Christians how to pray. There are no Christians. That's Acts chapter 11 when they start. Who is He teaching? He's teaching His Jewish disciples that are looking for this powerful coming. And He says, "After this manner pray ye, Our Father, which art in heaven, hallowed be Thy name." Now, please don't misunderstand. I'm not belittling this prayer by any stretch of the imagination. This is a wonderful, glorious prayer. But just remember, He's telling His Jewish disciples to pray for something that right now has been postponed. Because right now He's dealing with the church. And we're looking for the rapture. We're not looking. Look in verse 10. He said, "Our Father which art in heaven, hallowed be Thy name. Thy kingdom come." He taught those Jewish men to pray, "Thy kingdom come." It hasn't come yet. That prayer has not been answered. We're not to pray for His kingdom to come. We're praying for His church to leave. Right? But they knew nothing about that in Matthew chapter 6. There was no, to His disciples, there was no concept of that. They're thinking in a typical Jewish setting. And our problem is when we as 21st century Christians read the Bible, we jump it into our time period. But He's telling them, pray like this, "Thy kingdom come." That's what they wanted, that kingdom. That millennial reign, that 1,000 years, Satan bound. The nation of Israel being the prime nation on the face of the earth. That's what Matthew 6 is all about when they say, "Thy kingdom come." So that 1,000-year reign of Christ is referred to as a kingdom. In Matthew, it's called 33 times the kingdom of heaven. The kingdom of heaven. You know what that means? Heaven on earth. When you read Matthew, you won't read that phrase in any other book of the Bible, the kingdom of heaven. It's only in Matthew. Matthew is the one writing to the Jews. Remember, Mark and Luke are writing to different groups, different interest groups, but Matthew's writing to the Jews, and he talks about the kingdom of heaven, the kingdom of heaven. 33 times he talks about it. What is the kingdom of heaven? That earthly kingdom of Jesus Christ, heaven on earth. And that's how we describe the millennium. As best as can be possible down here, it's heaven on earth. It is a kingdom. Look at the Gospel of Luke. Luke chapter 1. Look at verse number 32. Again, when he came the first time, the Jews were expecting what he's going to be like the second time. And when he came the first time, Luke chapter 1, behold, thou shalt conceive in thy womb and bring forth a son, and shall call his name Jesus. Verse 32. And he shall be great, and he shall be called the Son of the Highest. And the Lord God shall give unto him the throne of his father David. And he shall reign over the house of Jacob forever, and of his kingdom there shall be no end. All the Bible is a tricky book. Because in verse number 30 and 31, Mary is going to have a baby. She's going to call his name Jesus. And the prophecy is there in verse 30 and 31. But verse 32 is jumping ahead 2,000 years. Because when he came the first time, he did not sit on the throne of his father David. There was not the beginning of his kingdom that had no end. That will all happen when he comes next time. When he comes to sit on the throne of David. When he comes to rule and reign on this earth. That is the rest. When he comes, the nation will have that. Look over at Acts chapter 1. Just building upon this foundation. What we're looking at tonight really opens up the Scriptures to us when we realize what the Jews were looking for when Jesus came the first time. They were looking for what they'll see the second time. This one coming in power, defeating his enemies by the very word of his mouth, sitting down on the throne of David in Jerusalem and ruling and reigning for 1,000 years on this earth. That's what they were looking for the first time. Not someone meek and lowly, riding on the back of a donkey into Jerusalem with people waving palm leaves. Not one saying, "My kingdom is not of this world. If my kingdom were of this world, then would my servants fight." One of these days, his kingdom will be of this world. In Acts chapter 1, notice verse number 6. When therefore they were come together, again, this is right before the church has started, these Jewish 120 Jewish disciples up in the upper room, they asked of him, saying, "Lord, wilt thou at this time restore again the kingdom to Israel?" You know what they're looking for? The Davidic kingdom. That thing we read about back there in 1 and 2 Samuel, when David sat upon the throne of Israel and Israel was in their heyday. They had David sitting on that throne and they were as blessed, as close to the utopia as you could ever be on this earth. And David wrote and said, "One of these days, one of my branches, a branch of Jesse, is going to come and sit on this throne just like I am." And that's what they're looking for and anticipating. And they asked that question in verse 6. "Wilt thou at this time restore again the kingdom of Israel?" He'd been crucified. He'd risen. He's about to ascend. Before he ascends, they said, "No, don't go anywhere. Set up that kingdom. It's time for it." And he said unto them, "It is not for you to know the times or the seasons which the Father hath put in his own power." He didn't say, "No, there is no kingdom." He said, "It's not time yet. It's not time yet. There is going to be one. There's the rapture, the revealing, the revelation, and then the rest. That kingdom is going to come." Look in Acts chapter 2. Verse number 29. Peter says here, as he's preaching on the day of Pentecost in chapter 2 and verse 29, "Men and brethren," again speaking to a Jewish audience, "let me freely speak unto you of the patriarch David, that he is both dead and buried, and his sepulchre is with us unto this day. Therefore, being a prophet," that's talking about David, "and knowing that God had sworn with an oath to him," all right, Peter is telling us what God promised David, "that of the fruit of his loins, according to the flesh, he would raise up Christ to sit on His throne. So the promise is, Jesus Christ is coming back. The promise is, He's going to destroy and defeat all of His enemies. The promise is, He's going to sit down on the throne of David, and He's going to rule and reign for 1,000 years. 1,000 years of no economic hardships. 1,000 years of no unemployment lines. 1,000 years of no increasing gas prices. I'm not sure what it's going to be like in that day, but everything that we fret and worry about, it'll be gone at that point in time. It will be a perfect environment for 1,000 years. Go back to Revelation 20 with me, if you would. Revelation chapter 20, during these 1,000 years, we already read, Satan is bound. He is tied up, he's cast into the bottomless pit, and he's down there silenced. He's shut up, silenced for 1,000 years. Now again, shut up doesn't mean silence, but it means bound down there in the bottomless pit for 1,000 years. Not to influence or bother anybody. In the meantime, the saints, verse number 4, are sitting upon thrones. That is your lot in the millennium. We will be here. We're coming down in Revelation 19, those 10,000 of the saints, we're coming down, the host of heaven following Jesus Christ back down. He sits on that throne, and we, according to the parable He taught in the Gospels, we will rule and reign with Him. In other words, according to our good works, not which got us into heaven, but according to our works after that, we get rewarded by reigning over places on this earth during the millennial kingdom. Some of you will have served the Lord so faithfully that you'll get London, England. I don't know why that sounds like a great place. I don't know. I'm trying to think of some place that's great. Maybe we need somebody, some exotic place or something, you know. But according to our works, we rule and reign with Him. The Lord appoints us as ambassadors or emissaries in these different places around the world, and we monitor and we regulate different places of the world. Some of us will get Dogtown. Of course, you have to be around here to even know what I'm talking about, all right? That's Buckeyeville, if you don't know. All right, but you'll get, some of us will get great places, some will get not so great places, according to our service to God right now. That's our inheritance in the millennial kingdom. But we are here to help the Lord monitor these things. We are judges. That's what it said in verse 4. And I saw thrones and they that sat upon them, and judgment was given unto them. We are to control things. We are to regulate things during the millennial kingdom. If there's any problem, Lord, I got a fellow over here that's giving us some trouble, and the Lord will take care of it fast. But that's our job during the millennium. We get to be here with Him. So we go up in the rapture, we come back with the revelation, and for the 1,000 years down here, we get to be with Jesus Christ. Because the Bible said when we went up the rapture, we will ever be with the Lord. So wherever He is, we're going to be. And if He's down here on earth for the 1,000 years, we're going to be down here too. So we're down here on this earth where Christ is reigning, where Satan is bound, where almost all of the wicked were destroyed at His coming, and there were those that carried over into the millennium, all those that hadn't taken the mark, and then they bear children, and children bear children, and then some of them are not as holy and religious as their fathers were, so the earth begins to repopulate and grow all over again during that 1,000 years. And though it's a perfect utopia, there's still going to be some problems there, and we're going to have to deal with them. But that's what we'll be doing. Now look back, if you would, in the Old Testament. Look at the book of Isaiah. That kind of gives us a synopsis of what goes on during that 1,000 years. But let me show you now some of the Old Testament prophecies concerning this time called the rest. And this is interesting just to note these, because this, again, is what Israel was looking forward to in the Old Testament. The couple of passages, Isaiah 53, He was led as a sheep before His shears was dumb. The Lord hath laid on Him the iniquity of us all. We know that's referring to the crucifixion of Christ. Nobody in the Old Testament knew that. Nobody. They weren't looking for a dying Messiah. They were looking for one coming in power. And everything in the Old Testament pointed that direction. It's so easy for us to point at the Jews today and say, how could you not realize that that miracle-working man was your Messiah? Because all the prophecies were pointing towards somebody that came differently. And we're looking at them. Look at Isaiah chapter 2, if you would, and verse number 1. The word that Isaiah the son of Amos saw concerning Judah and Jerusalem. And it shall come to pass in the last days that the mountain of the Lord's house shall be established in the top of the mountains and shall be exalted above the hills, and all nations shall flow into it. What you have here is that new millennium with Christ sitting in Jerusalem and all the world worshiping Him during that millennial reign, those 1,000 years. Verse 3, and many people shall go and say, Come ye, and let us go up to the mountain of the Lord, to the house of God of Jacob. And He will teach us of His ways, and we will walk in His paths. For out of Zion shall we go forth the law, and the word of the Lord from Jerusalem. And He shall judge among the nations, and shall rebuke many people, and they shall beat their swords into plowshares. You've heard this so often before. They'll beat their swords into plowshares, and their spears into pruning hooks. Nation shall not lift up sword against nation, neither shall they learn war anymore. O house of Jacob, come ye, and let us walk in the light of the Lord. Those verses are all talking about that 1,000-year period of time. I would challenge you when you're reading Isaiah, Jeremiah, Ezekiel, reading the minor prophets, look for these things. Remember when you're reading them, if you read something, you say, that sounds like the rapture. Can't be. Because the church isn't anywhere in the Old Testament. God's dealing with the church is not in the Old Testament. So that's talking about this coming kingdom, this utopia that's there. And so when you're reading it and you come across it, you say, boy, that's going to be a great day. That's going to be something else. We can't even begin to imagine it. Imagine this world with the devil locked away and Jesus Christ living on it, ruling and reigning in righteousness. Punishment given out as it should be given. No warning, 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 warning. Slap on the wrist. Judgment taken care of. That's the way it's going to be at that time. Look at Isaiah. We'll just look at several here in Isaiah. Look at chapter 9. Here's one you're very familiar with. We talked about this a little bit last week. Isaiah chapter 9, verse number 6. That great Christmas verse. And it is. Please don't come to Christmas time and say, well, we can't use that verse. Preacher told us we can't. No. We can quote that at Christmas time. For unto us a child is born, unto us a son is given. There's Christmas. The rest of it is not. All right? And the government shall be upon His shoulder. One of these days it will be. When He comes the second time. Again, the Old Testament Jews were looking at those verses being the same thing. This child, this son's going to come and he's going to be our government. The government shall be upon His shoulder. His name shall be called Wonderful, Counselor, the Mighty God, the Everlasting Father, the Prince of Peace. Notice verse 7. Of the increase of His government and peace there shall be no end. That didn't happen when He came the first time. Upon the throne of David and upon His kingdom to order it and to establish it with judgment and with justice from henceforth even forever. The zeal of the Lord of hosts will perform this. Isaiah is writing not about the church and the rapture. He's writing about the rest. All right? He uses that word. Look at chapter 11. We could go all the way back to verse 4 in Isaiah 11. I want to get down to verse 9 and 10, but running start verse 4. But with righteousness shall He judge the poor, reprove with equity for the meek of the earth. And He shall smite the earth with the rod of His mouth. There's that revelation. With the breath of His lips He shall slay the wicked. And righteousness shall be the girdle of His loins, and faithfulness the girdle of His reins. The wolf also shall dwell with the lamb, and the leopard shall lie down with the kid. What's that talking about? Perfect peace even in the animal kingdom. Those who are naturally at animosity with each other. We'd say the cat and the dog. Or the cat and the mouse. I don't know what he would want to... But he says the wolf and the lamb, the leopard and the kid. They will lie down together. The calf and the young lion and the fatling together, and a little child shall lead them. And the cow and the bear shall feed. Their young ones shall lie down together. And the lion shall eat straw like an ox. A perfect kingdom where even the animals get along with each other. Much like it was in the Garden of Eden. Look down at verse 9. They shall not hurt nor destroy in all My holy mountain. For the earth shall be full of the knowledge of the Lord. That's never happened before. That's not true now. But it will be in that day. The earth shall be full of the knowledge of the Lord as the waters cover the seas. And in that day there shall be a root of Jesse, which shall stand for an ensign of the people, to it shall the Gentiles seek, and his rest, there's the word right there, his rest shall be glorious. That thousand-year rest. The earth will be at rest. Animal life will be at rest. Humanity will be at rest when Satan is bound and Jesus Christ is right here on this earth. Again, this is the prophecy of the Old Testament, what these Jews were longing for so desperately. Isaiah chapter 14, verse number 4. Again, this is all through these Old Testament, Isaiah, Jeremiah, Ezekiel, and even to the minor prophets. When you're reading those, just be watching for it. Know what time it's talking about. Chapter 14 and verse 4, that thou shalt take up this proverb against the king of Babylon. Revelation 16 and 17, all right? And say, how hath the oppressor ceased? The golden city ceased. The Lord hath broken the staff of the wicked and the scepter of the rulers. He who smote the people in wrath with a continual stroke, he that ruled the nations in anger is persecuted and none hindered. The whole earth is at rest and is quiet. They break forth into singing. During that millennial reign, the nation of Israel, the house of Jacob, Jerusalem, will be God's chosen people, like they were in the Old Testament under the kingdom of David. They are going to be the apple of His eye, as it says in the book of Job. And while He is there with them, and then we as Gentiles, with the church members, are ruling over the rest of the world, the inhabitants of the earth, it's going to be a perfect environment and a perfect place of finally peace. I guess Portland, Oregon won't be there. Chicago, Illinois. Now, I'll say this, not the right word, my luck. My luck, I'll get Chicago. Merle, you get Portland. Okay. Brother Gary, you can have Los Angeles. Michael, you get New York City. Boy, what a... All right, so that's what it's going to be. And it's going to be perfect rest in that place. You'll not turn on CNN, because nobody will be there from CNN, but you'll not turn on CNN and see any riots going on, no fighting going on, no wars going on. There's going to be nothing to report but good news. That's why they won't be there anymore. They don't know how to report good news. Everything will be fine. Look over at Isaiah 33, skipping quite a few. Look at Isaiah 33. Isaiah chapter 33, verse number 5. The Lord is exalted, for He dwelleth on high. He hath filled Zion. Whenever you find the word Zion in the Bible, automatically think the kingdom of the millennium. That's what Zion's all about. You know why they call... You could call them the nation of Israel, but they call them Zionists. You know why they call them Zion? Because Zion, the whole word Zion means... Their Messiah is coming back to rule and reign at that place, and they are going to be top dog. That's why people use the word Zionist in such a negative sense. Anti-Semitic. All right? It is a prophecy. That is the way it's going to happen. I don't know about you, but I have no jealousy over the nation of Israel that's going to be in that position in the millennium. I'm happy with where I'm going to be. It sure beats a lake of fire. And so we don't have to worry about that, but He has filled Zion with judgment and righteousness, and wisdom and knowledge shall be of the stability of thy times. Wisdom and knowledge shall be the stability of thy times. Strength and salvation, the fear of the Lord is His treasure. There is coming a day. All right, we sing that about the rapture, and that's a great one too, but this day's coming too. Turn over to Jeremiah. We just got time for maybe two more. Look over at Jeremiah chapter 23. Again, we could go from Isaiah all the way to Malachi. Especially the two Z's, Zephaniah and Zechariah. But even Malachi, Micah. Maybe we'll look at Micah. But Jeremiah chapter 23. Verse number 5. Jeremiah 23, verse 5, "Behold, the days come, saith the Lord, that I will raise unto David a righteous branch," capital B. That's talking about Jesus Christ. He is the branch of Jesse, the root of David. "I will raise unto David a righteous branch, and a king shall reign and prosper, and shall execute judgment and justice in the earth. In his days Judah shall be saved, and Israel shall dwell safely. And this is his name, whereby he shall be called," all caps, "the Lord our righteousness." This is that 1,000-year glorious kingdom of Christ on the earth, called by Matthew the kingdom of heaven, because it will be heaven on earth. Jeremiah 33. It's hard to get. Look at 32 while you're there. I don't know where to start. Start in verse 38. "And they shall be my people, and I will be their God." This is talking about that day. "And I will give them one heart and one way, that they may fear me forever for the good of them and of their children after them. And I will make an everlasting covenant with them, that I will not turn away from them to do them good. But I will put my fear in their hearts, that they shall not depart from me. Yea, I will rejoice over them to do them good, and I will plant them in this land, assuredly with my whole heart and with my whole soul." Over to chapter 33, verse 15. "In those days and at that time will I cause the branch of righteousness to grow up unto David, and he shall execute judgment and righteousness in the land. In those days shall Judah be saved, and Jerusalem shall dwell safely. And this is the name wherewith he shall be called, the Lord our righteousness." That matches the verses in Isaiah that we already read. Now, I didn't have this written down, but Micah chapter 4, I think, is... Yeah, Micah chapter 4. You find Micah, he hides in there sometimes. Between Jonah and Nahum. Micah chapter 4, verse 1. "But in the last days it shall come to pass that the mountain of the house of the Lord shall be established in the top of the mountains. And it shall be exalted above the hills, and people shall flow into it. And many nations shall come and say, Come, and let us go up to the mountain of the Lord, and to the house of the God of Jacob. And he will teach us of his ways, and we will walk in his paths. For the law shall go forth of Zion, and the word of the Lord from Jerusalem. And he shall judge among many nations, and rebuke strong nations afar off. And they shall beat their swords into plowshares, and their spears into pruning hooks. Nation shall not lift up sword against nation, neither shall they learn war anymore. But they shall sit every man under his vine and under his fig tree, and none shall make them afraid. For the mouth of the Lord of hosts has spoken it. For all people will walk, every one in the name of his God, and we will walk in the name of the Lord our God forever and ever." This is the kingdom of David that's coming. There's going to be the rapture, then the revealing, then the revelation, and then this rest. 1,000 years of the devil bound, the saints ruling and reigning, the inhabitants of the earth all worship, coming up to Jerusalem to worship the God of Jacob. Everybody will be filled with knowledge and the fear of the Lord. "Mine eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the Lord." Remember that song that was written? Harriet Beecher Stowe. That's a great song. It's just way out of place. That song's talking about this. When the Lord comes back there, when He tramples out the grapes of wrath. Or He tramples out something where the grapes of wrath are stored. Alright? That's all. Glory, glory, hallelujah. That's all talking about this day. Now, a lot of people, and this is the problem with the song itself, a lot of people think we're going to do that right now. There is no rapture. There is no revealing. There is no revelation. We are going to bring in the kingdom. So you'll hear churches unwittingly praying, "Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven." That's not going to happen without Jesus Christ being here. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth. You think with the will of God is being done on earth right now? Have you watched the news? I know you have. That's talking about a different time. And when that time comes, His kingdom will be like that. We're not going to bring the kingdom in. See, there's folks that believe it's called amillennialism, and it's simply this, that we are going to make this world such a beautiful utopia that the Lord in heaven is going to say, hey, I want to be down there. My Christian people have made a kingdom. I'm going to go down there now and join them. That's not the way the Bible describes. This thing gets worse and worse and worse till He comes and destroys the whole thing, and then He sits down on that throne and rules and reigns for 1,000 years. God has not left us in the dark concerning things to come. There's the rapture, there's the revealing, there's the revelation, and there's the rest. And next week, we'll go beyond that. Is there anything after that? Yes, there is. And we'll look at that next Wednesday. Let's stand together this evening with our heads bowed and our eyes closed.